I can burn it down if that's what I want.
WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Ritia Murphy with your WSLR News headlines for Tuesday, July 14th. Sarasota and Manatee counties have officially lifted their burn bans after recent rainfall reduced wildfire danger across the region. In Sarasota County, officials say the drought index remained below the burn ban threshold for 7 consecutive days, allowing the emergency order to expire. The ban had been in place since April and prohibited open burning, campfires, and even personal fireworks over the 4th of July weekend. Fire officials say residents can resume outdoor burning where permitted and are still urging caution as dry conditions could return. A downtown Sarasota condominium project is ready to move ahead after city commissioners voted last week to transfer ownership of a public alley to the developer. Osprey Court lease sits within the footprint of a proposed condo project at Ringling Boulevard and South Osprey Avenue. The developer has not presented a site plan, but is offering 4 affordable apartments. The loss of 12 affordable apartments in an existing building the developer will tear down was a sticking point for commissioners. However, neighbors urged commissioners to accept the loss of the alley because the developer could force them to accept 2 18-floor towers under Florida's Live Local Act. The commission voted 4-1 to approve the vacation of the alley, with Debbie Trice dissenting. The project still needs additional approvals before construction begins, but Monday's vote removes a key obstacle. The Florida Healthcare Association is warning the state could lose as many as 35,000 caregivers if work authorization expires for Haitian immigrants currently protected under Temporary Protected Status, or TPS. Industry groups say roughly 1 in 4 Haitians living in Florida works in healthcare, many in nursing homes and home health agencies. Federal officials recently extended work permits through July 24th, but healthcare providers say losing those workers could create serious staffing shortages and disrupt care for thousands of elderly Floridians. Florida Attorney General James Earthmeyer has opened an investigation into the use of potassium bromate, a bread additive that has been linked in some studies to cancer in laboratory animals and is banned in several countries. The Attorney General has subpoenaed General Mills as part of the investigation, seeking information about products sold in Florida and what consumers have been told about the ingredient. Uthmeyer says the goal is to increase transparency and help Floridians better understand what's in the food they buy. This has been Ritia Murphy with your WSLR News headlines for Tuesday, July 14th.
You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, also streaming on WSLR.org or by downloading the free WSLR app. This is the Healthy Living Hour, airing live every Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. My name is Rebecca Acosta, local acupuncture physician, and I'm your host. A huge thanks to our soundboard operator, Neil Rubidoux of this morning's Melody Matrix. You can catch Neil here every Tuesday, 7 to 9 a.m. Thanks, Neil, for running that board for me. Our goal here is to offer a wide variety of topics and guests to better inform and educate our community on current health and wellness issues. As a disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed by host guests and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, nor volunteers. Further, no one here is providing any type of medical diagnosis, treatment, nor advice. Everything said here is solely for general information and to foster critical thinking. We encourage you to consult your doctor for personal medical advice. Good morning, everybody. We are here live this morning with singer-songwriter Justin Ryan. And thanks so much for being here, Justin. And also, I just want to share that Our studio line is open. If you're listening in and you want to reach out, if you have a question for Justin, I'm sure he'd welcome those. That number is 941-954-8636, 941-854-8636. We would love to hear from you this morning. So let's jump on in. I first got introduced to Justin this past Easter at a Sunday service at our local MCC church where Justin sang. And he so graciously, after me reaching out, agreed to be on my show. He has a very profound story. And anyway, Justin is a nationally recognized singer, speaker, writer, and LGBTQ plus Christian advocate whose music and ministry have reached audiences across the states for more than two decades. A former Nashville session vocalist who has worked alongside some of country and gospel's music's most celebrated artists, Justin combines Southern gospel roots with a message of radical grace, inclusion, and hope. He is the creator and host of Southern Gospel Sissy, a weekly online program that explores faith, justice, and spirituality through music and storytelling from the margins. Justin also serves with Balm, B-A-L-M, Ministries, working alongside his longtime mentor, Marcia Stevens Pino, widely known as the pioneering artist behind For Those Tears I Died, and often called the mother of contemporary Christian music. Together, they continue a legacy of ministry that has helped create space for the LGBTQ plus Christians within the church. Following the loss of his husband, Scott Bryan, in 24, after a courageous battle with cancer, Justin's work has increasingly focused on grief, resilience, and finding hope after profound loss. He is currently working on a new book that chronicles their journey through cancer, caregiving, loss, and the healing that follows, offering an honest and heartfelt look at faith in life's most difficult seasons. Beginning in July, this month, Justin will also serve as a monthly columnist for Maryland Outland Magazine, where he will write about faith, LGBTQ plus inclusion, Southern gospel music, grief, and the intersections of spirituality and everyday life. Through concerts, speaking engagements, writing, the media industry, Justin continues to build bridges between faith communities and LGBTQ plus people, sharing the conviction that God's love is bigger than fear. Grace is wider than exclusion, and there is a place at the table for everyone. Justin, thank you so much for being here this morning, and I'm actually almost grateful I made the big oops mistake last month when I was supposed to have you on, because now we get the whole hour to for ourselves and just to focus on you and your story. And I think it's fair to say you've been through quite a lot.
I would say so.
So, Justin, I understand your story begins in a place called Paducah, Kentucky. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in this very little town in western Kentucky called Paducah. A lot of people, some people might know where it is. If you don't know where it's at, it's between two little towns. One of those towns is called Monkey's Eyebrow, and the other one is Possum Trot.
Nice.
So, you know, there weren't a whole lot of people in those towns like me. But I knew in that town, you know, growing up, it was kind of like your mom and pop little town. Everybody went to church on Sundays. Everybody, you know, went to the same restaurants after they went to church, and everybody had the same routine. Everybody knew everybody, and I came from just your typical family of four. It was my mom and my dad, my little brother and I, and we were in church all the time. It was, you know, if it was a Sunday morning service, Wednesday night, Sunday night, whenever it was, we were there basically.
Wow. And your grandfather was
Yes, my grandfather was a Cumberland Presbyterian pastor, and he and his wife, my grandmother, they were probably some of the biggest influences in my life. My grandmother, people ask all the time when I first started singing, and it was because my grandmother overheard me in the car singing along with my Walkman at the age of 8 years old to the Bette Midler Beaches soundtrack. So it all tracks back.
Sweet. And tell me how, like, please share your story of, you know, you wrote, and we played it twice now on this program since Easter time, last month on our one program, and then the one right after that Easter show, we were talking about some hard stuff. You wrote a song called Different.
Well, I didn't actually write it.
Oh, you didn't write it.
I didn't write it. It's okay. A couple of friends of mine wrote it, and it was one of those songs that was sent to me back in 2014. And I, all my life, could relate to that song because I felt different at an early, at a very young age. I remember when I was younger, I used to ask my parents for a kitchen set when I was probably 4 or 5 years old. And my dad said, absolutely not. And then they gave me the next best thing. They thought action figures would solve the problem. But they gave me He-Man figures. And, you know, I think that just, they didn't realize they were giving me muscular dolls to play with. But that was, I grew up with kind of that mentality of parents who I knew at a very early age that they probably wouldn't accept it. So by the time I was 16, I knew 16, 17, my grandmother had passed away, and she and my grandfather were really the forces in my life that let me know that the church was good. I'd heard a lot of judgment through all my life, but in my grandparents' church, that's where just they always taught me that God's love was the main thing.
And for everyone.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. My grandfather, there was a guy in our church who had, he and his wife had divorced because he had come out. They had decided to be really good friends and just raise their kids together, and he would come to church, and of course people would start whispering and gossiping about it. Finally, my grandfather heard it one Sunday, and he said real loud to the guy, he said, oh, I'm so glad you're here. He said, I just want to let you know that this is your church, and you belong here. And if anybody tells you otherwise, you let them know that they can come and talk to me.
Wow.
And that at that early age, I thought, you know, this is a place I can be safe.
And that had to be about, what, 30 years ago?
Absolutely. And for the Cumberland Presbyterian Church, that was a huge thing then because they weren't open and affirming then.
That's radical.
Mm-hmm. And so growing up there, I knew I was different, and of course, I ended up being like all other kids. I worked a retail job to survive in high school, and I was singing with a local band, and a lot of people knew who I was, and there was another gay guy that I was working with at the local Sears. And we were working there when I was in high school, and while we were there one day, some of my dad's church folks came in, and I guess they had heard that I was gay, because I'd come out to just a few people. And as I was in the store, they started walking past me, and they'd go mumble something about Jesus and this, that, and the other. And so finally, my friend said, you better go ask them what they're talking about. So I asked one of them. I said, you know, I hear what you're saying. What's going on? And they said, well, we've heard about you. And I said, oh, you've heard about me. What have you heard? And they said, you're a homosexual. And I said, oh, and they said, and we're praying so that one of your 7 gay demons doesn't leap out into us. And I thought,
wow.
Years later, if I could have found those people, I would have said, maybe you could have used a few of my gay demons, you know, like fashion and hair care products and big words and all those things. But I doubt they would have gotten it. So after that, my friend at Sears said, you know, you really should talk to your parents because they're going to hear it from somebody on the street. And so I went home one night, and I planned it for a Wednesday night after church so that my dad, maybe the spirit would still be flowing in the room when I got home. And when I started talking to him, he said, well, just go ahead and say it. And I said, okay, I'm gay. And he said, well, you see that door over there? He said, I want you to walk out of it and never return. You're no longer my son, and we don't want to have anything to do with you. And I don't know if you can imagine, but for a 17-year-old, that's really hard to come to terms with because your family is the only support system you have. You don't have any other, you know, support at that time. And you don't know anything about this new life that you've been given. And that was during the time when Matthew Shepard was murdered. And so, you know, it was this big world, and here you are, and you have no experience and nothing to go by, and you're just kind of thrown out into it. And so I was. And so I lived the rest of my senior year in my car and didn't tell anybody, and worked at Sears and stayed in my car and graduated. And I did all that just to find somebody and to be okay and to be in a relationship. And that happened for me. And I found somebody who was a little bit older than me and had a house. And I thought, well, that'll work. And it did. But, you know, I grew up in that environment where they didn't tell you anything about, you know, don't hit your spouse or anything. They just said, don't cheat on them. And so the partner that I was with then at that young age, it wouldn't be anything at all for me to go to Sears with a black eye or a broken foot.
Oh, my goodness.
Because things were just so bad at home. But again, I didn't know anything about that because as long as he didn't cheat, I thought, well, that's just part of what this looks like.
Love. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so anyway, come to find out, he did end up cheating. And when I found out, I thought to myself, okay, I get it. You know, my family doesn't want me. The people in the church don't want me. My friends don't want me. This person who I've given everything up for doesn't want me. And so that must mean that God couldn't possibly have anything to say to me. And so I did what anybody at that age would do. I tried to take my own life because I thought that that was, you know, didn't God want me dead too? That's what all those fundamentalists had said to me all those years. And so I had to really search myself. I thought that singing was plan A and somehow I'd missed it. And so my friend at Sears one day came up to me and said, you know, I know you've been really struggling lately. He said, have you thought at all about going to church? I thought, honey, that's the problem with this whole thing. And he said, no, I'm talking about real church. And so at the time, Paducah did not have a gay bar, but they had a Metropolitan Community Church, believe it or not,
wow,
with about 30 members. And of course, I wasn't too sure about that gay church thing. He said, well, come on. And I said, well, isn't that more like a more daylight, less smoky version of a bar? And he said, no, it's really church. So after he nagged me for weeks, I finally decided I better go. And so I dressed way up and sat on the very back row so that whatever was up there was not going to get me and, you know, showed up way past gay standard time. And I don't know what it was about that service. I don't remember what the pastor said or what the songs were, but I do remember I felt that same feeling that I felt when I was a kid singing in church with my grandmother. You know, that feeling that still small voice of God was saying, you know what, you don't have to run anymore. All those voices you've heard are voices of chaos and confusion. And it's not just for gay folks. You know, there are a number of things that people feel that the church is down on them about, whether it's, you know, whether they've, you know, been divorced or, you know, anything of that sort that just seems out of line. And so as I started to sit there, I was starting to feel a little bit different. I wasn't sure if, you know, I was going to be okay with all the people there, but God and I were starting to get on the page together. And as I walked out, the pastor stopped me and said, well, Justin, we're so glad to have you here. I thought, okay. And they said, and we've got you in our program to sing next week. And I thought, oh, I don't do that anymore, but thanks. And she goes, well, like I said, we've got you in our program to sing next week. You can be here at this time, services at this time. And I don't know if you've ever seen a Paducah, Kentucky lesbian or not, but you just shake your head and say yes when you're about 18 years old.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. And so for the first time, I started to kind of put together all the pieces of myself that I thought were so fragmented that they could never come together. And so when I talk about working with Marcia Stevens, she's the one who was at that church, who she came to the church to sing and they had me open for her. And so this song that I want to share with you is a song that she wrote. It's called The Real You. And she wrote that song, and that's exactly what I felt that night. And you don't have to be gay to relate to this song. You can go into the church and you can feel any sort of way about whatever guilt you're carrying. But The Real You, God sees that all along.
Wow. Thank you, Justin. And here's The Real You.
My aching heart had hunted you, longing to be known. But each time I was asked to leave, left to seek alone. Out of the closet, out of the church, out of the prison of the search. I swore I'd never beg again or hide my face in shame. This is how you make
made me, so I won't take the blame. And since I've learned to live with the doubt, what's this yearning in my heart tonight about? Is this the real you? The real you? I wanted truth, but only learned to lie. Is this the real you? This time the real you. My wounded heart can't dare to hope. I lost the vision years ago. I searched so long. How can I know if it's true? Is it you? My child, I'm waiting here, longing to be known. I left all of the world behind to look for you alone. Out of the heavens, sentenced to death, saying I love you with every breath. I watched out for you, smoothed the path, and tried to show you light, but you would never let me hold you in the night. So now once more I offer you the chance. Will you turn away or join the dance? Is this the real? The real you.
The real you.
You looked for truth, but only learned to lie. Is this the real you?
The real you.
This time the real you.
The real you.
You hid from me long years ago. My waiting heart has missed you so. So if you're ready, let me know if it's true. My lie would not embrace my mask, but in this place, lost in your love, I'll never have to ask. Is this the real you? The real you? I wanted truth, but only learned to lie. Is this the real? This time the real you. My wounded heart can't dare to hope. I lost the vision years ago. I searched so long. How can I know if it's true? Just as I am without one plea. And yes, this is finally
the real me,
the real me. So tell me one more time, God, is it you?
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Justin. You know, in one of the videos that I viewed of you, it was so powerful, and we'll share how people can find that in a little bit. But you mentioned that you choose the songs that say the things that others shy away from.
Oh, yeah. I feel like there's a lot of people saying the same thing and sowing a lot of seeds of discord, when sometimes you can just say the truth and the truth will set you free. You know, I'm in the process now. I've been traveling to sing for the LGBTQ community for the last 20 years. And I say that because when I first started, I ended up traveling with Marcia for a long time. She and her wife, Cindy, started a training school for emerging artists to the LGBTQ community. And I kind of started, I was a member of the first class, and then I headed up all the classes after that. I taught and taught them how to go on the road and took them on the road for a while and did that. And then I ultimately ended up in Nashville working at a studio with folks like Dolly Parton and wow. Forder Wagner and Loretta Lynn and a lot of folks like that who became like family. And for me, they could tell that I had talent, but they didn't know what to do with me as an openly gay guy. So when I did my first album, which this month turns 20 years old, I did that in the studio, and they took it to a Christian record label, and the label wanted to sign me. But the caveat was is that I had to not be out. I had to go back into the closet. Mm. And as a kid in their 20s, when all your dreams are on the other side of the table, it's real easy to feel like, yeah, I can do exactly what they want me to. I can fit into that box. But the more I started to think about it, the more people and faces that I saw of all the people I'd been singing to who had been Jesus to me in all that time. I always use the term Jesus with skin on, because sometimes we don't feel God or we don't see God in the situations that we go through. But then God sends someone in the form of Jesus with skin on to be that person that says, you know what, you're doing okay. And I'm right here beside you. And I always look at that as God winks. I got married in 2015 to Scott Bryant, who was my husband. We were from that same hometown and met years later in Nashville. And so kind of felt like God was doing what needed to happen there. And he loved the ministry that we did and believed in it just as much as I do. And as we got together in 2020, when the pandemic happened, it was one of those times that was very, you know, I didn't travel. I didn't really go anywhere. And that was hard. And Scott's health was starting to decline, but we couldn't really put our finger on what was going on with it. And so a year and a half later, after they had tried to test for all these big things that we just were scarier than we thought, whether they thought he'd had a stroke or thought he had had MS or whatever, they finally in 2023 realized that he was at stage 3C colorectal cancer that had already spread to his bladder and to his prostate. So the plan was to do 12 rounds of chemo and to shrink that, and then radiation. And then after that, then they were going to go in and remove all of the organs there and leave him with two bags, which was going to be a lot for someone to deal with.
And he's young.
Yeah, so he was 44 at the time when that happened. And he was always really positive about it, and even in times when I didn't know how to be positive about it. So that was very helpful. But it was one of those times where it didn't matter where we went or how hard the situation was, God's presence was with us. And that's one of those things that, you know, I've heard a lot of people argue about Christians and gay folks over the years, but, you know, the best way you can be a gay Christian is to just go be one. And nobody can deny the presence of God when the presence of God is in the room, you know? Mm-hmm. And for me, a lot of those precious times would be just when we were in the room together. We would go to the waiting rooms of those treatments that he would have. And one time we were there and another lesbian couple was in the room with us. And that was rare for Paducah. And so while we were in the room together, they just needed someone to share with that they could relate to. And I looked over at Scott and he looked over at me, and we both were like, yeah, it's one of those God winks. We were going to MD Anderson one week for some treatment for him in Houston. And of course he couldn't fly, so we had to drive him. And as we were driving, we ended up in the middle of all these huge storms, tornadoes and flooding that Houston was having. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, God, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but what I do know is that I can't do anything for his pain, but I can get him there in one piece. So just help me. And as we rounded the corner of the interstate and went around, there was the biggest rainbows going over both sides of the interstate. And I thought, you know, we're going to be okay. And so as we went to that treatment and as he got through all that stuff, the treatments just weren't working. And so we got to the point where we were to have him have hospice. So hospice came in, and I'll tell you, those last 2 months were the most precious months because we really got to say all the things that we needed to say. I got to hear all of the things that, you know, he was looking forward to and what, you know, he wanted me to be happy and find someone and all that stuff. So, you know, we really got to say what we needed to say. And of course, I wanted him to have whatever he wanted for his funeral. I said, whatever your wishes are, final wishes are, we'll do it. And his final wish was to have a memorial service at the church he grew up in, which, oddly enough, was a Cumberland Presbyterian church.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, this will be no big deal. My grandfather was a pastor, you know. So I asked Scott's father, who had been an elder of that church for over 30 years, just, can you talk to the pastor? And, you know, this is what we want to do. So 10 days later, his dad comes back and says, oh, well, the pastor's decided that you can't have the service here. And I said, it's 2024. What's his excuse? He said, well, you're a gay couple and you want a lesbian to participate in the service and they're not going to let you do that. So I thought to myself, I don't know what to do. So there were several other churches in the area who stepped in and said, yeah, we'll be happy to do it. So I asked Scott, what do you want to do? And he said, you know, I really want it at that church because that means something to me. So after a few tries at getting the pastor's phone number, I finally got it. And we had a very productive meeting, or as we call it in the South, a come-to-Jesus meeting. And he said he would think about it and would let me know on, and they were going to have a session meeting, and he would let me know if the board of the church decided, and that would be on Monday. So I went to let Scott know the news, and he said, well, I'm going to go to that meeting. I said, honey, I can't even get you to the bathroom. He said, no, I'm going to go. And I said, well, let's just do something else. Then we'll record a video. So one of the hardest things I've ever had to do is sit and watch my husband record a video to beg for his own funeral. But 2 days later, the pastor called and decided that he had had a change of heart and that we could have the service there. So when I went to tell Scott, he just kind of said, well, that's great, and kind of grinned like he and God had gotten one over on the pastor, you know. But 3 days later, he would pass away in my arms. And that would be, of all the things I've been through in my life, that would be the thing that was the most difficult. Because nothing prepares you for that. Nothing prepares you for what's next on that journey. Nothing prepares you for any of it. And one of the things that I think that was so great about Scott is that he talked every day about the goodness of God. Mm. And that's something that I think that we, in the time that we're living in right now, we are looking at all the chaos and confusion that's going on out there, and we forget that the goodness of God is to the left of us, it's to the right of us, it's in front of us, it's behind us, it's above us and below us, and it's everywhere. And sometimes when we are so caught up in the mess that's going on around us, if we'll just look for those little God winks, those are the things that let us know. After Scott passed away, I found his journal. He kept a journal, and on the front of the journal was a little note that was kind of written in some scribbly handwriting. And I know he wrote it the last week of his life because he had great handwriting. And in it, it said, Justin, please take this journal and use it to help others. Wow. And it was all about his journey with cancer, and he had had some addiction issues in the past. And so the pain medication from the cancer was complicating some of that, and he just really wanted to help folks. And so that was encouraging. But one of the biggest moments for me was when I was going through his phone after he died, and I found a voice recording that was on there, and I played it, and it was him singing a song. And I tried to think, well, when could he have possibly sung this? So I looked at the date on the voice memo, and then I looked at the journal that he had kept, and it was when he was in the hospital at his very worst after one of the worst treatments, and I'd gone home for the night. And in his worst moments, he felt the need to sing about the goodness of God. And that just kind of said it all for me. You know, God is so good to each and every one of us, and it doesn't have a limit as far as to if you're gay, if you're straight. Doesn't have a limitation to if you're an American or an immigrant. It doesn't have anything to do with what your nationality or race is, or if you have a disability. God loves you exactly where you're at. And I think so many people are so caught up in the lies of hate and confusion that are being represented out there by what I call the fan club.
Yeah.
That they forget to listen for the goodness of God. So I wanted to share another song with you. When Scott got sick, we started doing a series, what you talked about, called Southern Gospel Sissy. Oh, I couldn't travel, and he wanted us to be able to get the message out to folks. And so he came up with this idea for the show, and when we started it, it's usually three or four of myself side by side singing different parts of these songs and giving a message. And as I would film them in the beginning, he would say, oh, no, 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 let me show you how to do it. So even as sick as he was, he would come down each week because he wanted that message to get out there and be good for folks and to share our story. Because you know what? You can debate theology, you can debate scripture, but you can't debate somebody's own lived experience. You can relate to it, but you can't debate it, you know? And so this song came out of that Southern Gospel Sissy series because it was the song that he actually sang on that recording. But this is me singing that song, and it's called The Goodness of God. So if you're out there today and you don't know what's going on, I hope that you will look for those signs all around you.
Yes, the ones that you also consider holy days.
I love you, Lord, for your mercy never fails me. And all my days I've been held in your hands. From the moment that I wake up until I lay my head, oh, I will sing of the goodness of God. The goodness of God. I love your voice. You have led me through the fire. In the darkest night, you are close like no other. I've known you as a father, and I've known the goodness of God. 'Cause all my life you have been faithful, and all my life you have been so, so good. With every breath that I am able, oh, I of the goodness of God. 'Cause your goodness is running after, it's running after me. Your goodness is running after, it's running after me. With my life laid down, I surrender now. I give you everything. Been faithful, and all my life you have been so, so, so good. With every breath of God. I'm gonna sing of the goodness of God.
Justin, that's absolutely beautiful. I'm so Thanks. Grateful for your gift and your sharing it here and your story. And I'd like to know a little bit of a segue here, but how, and I've been wondering this for years, and I think I shared an email back and forth. I had a personal experience that it haunts me. I regret having not stood up better for someone.
Well, I think everybody has that one time in their life. I don't think it's just about the one experience, but I feel like I have that experience in my own life too, where I feel like there are people who are different than me who I could be a better ally for because I don't understand fully. I think always, it's always good to ask questions. It's always good to, you know, let folks know you're there. But I also think it's important, you know, like for me, I've been writing a lot lately, writing songs a lot lately. And I wrote a song recently I was trying to find a way to communicate how our trans brothers and sisters feel going through coming out with that to their parents. And I have a friend of mine who had shared their story online, and it just kind of clicked for me. And I feel like that part of what our responsibility is in being allies for whatever we're being allies with is to step up and say, to share that with that person and say, hey, you know, this is what I've done and I'd really like for you to hear it and tell me, you know, because there are things that I don't understand sometimes, you know, because I'm not trans, but I have all kinds of trans brothers and sisters. And I feel like to be a bigger ally for myself, I have to do anything I can to, like I said earlier, be Jesus with skin on. You know, that's what we're all called to do. And I feel like the goodness of God itself, sometimes, you know, we forget about it. But for me, in the grieving process after Scott passed away, it was the thing that showed up the most. Whether it was, you know, I'd washed my pants one night and wore them like 2 weeks later, and there was a tiny little thing in the pocket Scott's GI doctor had given me a month ago, and it had been washed a couple of times, and how it was still in the pocket, I don't know, but on a day I needed it, there it was.
Mm.
You know, there were so many things like that. And I just feel like, you know, we forget that even in death and loss, when you think about those are pretty much the end all be all things that you can worry about and be sad about. Even in those things, God's goodness is found, because you know, I think about Scott being gone and that he's in my future, you know, and I feel like that the whole purpose, people say, well, aren't you mad that you aren't together anymore? And aren't you mad because, you know, you don't have that relationship? I am, and I grieve it. But what makes it better for me is to realize that I was the only person that could get him to the next stage of his journey.
Yeah. And you share in this one video that I watched. It was such a profound statement, and I don't remember it exactly, but it's like you weren't there to save him or to try to get him better again. You were there to let him go onto, to be there in the transition of whatever that was next for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And much like my grandmother, his grandmother was a very important person in his life. And as he was there in his bed, I would say, you know, how are you feeling? He says, well, every now and again, I feel like my grandmother's here and I feel like she's with me. So it was my job to help get him back to his grandmother, you know, and help get him back to that ultimate place of healing. Cause, you know, it was, you know, that'll be 2 years next month that he passed away. And so when I get to August, I always think it's his birthday and we should celebrate, but it's also, you know, the month that he passed away, and I would never bring him back because I know now that he's not in any pain anymore. And so God always makes a way. And for me, it's just the doors just keep opening and I just keep trying to walk through them because the goodness of God is there.
Oh, indeed. And if I can just share a little personal story, it made me think of something in my own life. My mother was 16 when she got pregnant with me. That's a whole story, and it was a bit of a scandal in our small town.
Oh, yeah.
And so she was 17 when she had me, and she was a great mother. But she was young. Like, it's a little weird. We're a little more like contemporaries than this, you know, other vertical type thing. But and I just had this close relationship with my grandmothers, two of them. Mm-hmm. And a number of years ago, my one grandmother passed on my birthday.
Oh.
And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so heavy. And then a roommate I had at that time, when I shared it with her, she's like, wow, isn't that beautiful? Your grandmother went to heaven on your birthday.
Yeah.
And it just, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Changes your whole perspective.
It changed my perspective, and now it's beautiful. Yeah, and I think if we can dig in and find those, shift a perspective.
Mm-hmm. And boy, do we need a shift in perspective
boy,
today.
Do we need a shift in perspective, yes. And you know, too, on that thing I watched, the video, and we'll share that later, I think you shared a song by a Fogartyville favorite here, Susan Werner, on her like a modernized version of the Lord's Prayer. And there's a phrase in there that's so profound. It's not deliver us from evil, but deliver us from those who think they're you.
And there are so many of those, aren't there?
And what a powerful message.
Well, you know, I wrote a song not too long ago called Separation of Church and Hate.
Oh,
and I feel like that's something that we really, really need to, like, focus on, because I think so many people use the church as a weapon.
Yeah, I think we're seeing this a lot more so now. Also, this brings to mind, you mentioned about the real altar call.
Oh, yeah. So for me growing up, you know, at the end of every concert that I ever had growing up, we would have what they called an altar call. And for those of you who know what that is, I don't know if you feel the flames of hell or if you feel like a cold breeze, but for us, what an altar call consisted of is that a big male gluttonous pastor was going to stand up in the front of the room, make you say, confess everything you'd ever done, make you say a bunch of magic words, and poof, instead of going to hell, you were just going to go to the Golden Corral after church service. But what I think about an altar call, I think about, you know, coming to a crossroads. What that means is, you know, I was going this way, and I think I'll go that way. That's all in the world that repentance is. And I think that so many times we've heard people say what sin is in our lives that we don't know what to do with real sin. And real sin is just the things that separate us from God. The hatred, the bitterness, the rejection, all the shame and stuff that we can choose to leave it all behind. And I feel like that's a choice that each of us can make. It's not something that we have to carry. It's not something that has to be brought around with us. It's something that we can let go of, and we can embrace the goodness that's out there, because after all, we all need a little bit of goodness in our lives.
Oh, we could use a whole lot of goodness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we need to be that to one another.
Absolutely.
Too. And I think that's the real message. Like, that Jesus I was introduced to was more, I would think he would want us to live how he lived.
Absolutely.
And love how he loved.
Well, that was the whole purpose of the message.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't to exclude. You know, I think people forget that they don't have to ask for permission to come to the table. The table was already set and is already big enough for everyone. You don't have to ask for permission. God didn't make those rules. We did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And boy, can we get in the way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Justin, too, like, let's talk. You are in the process of writing a book.
Yes, I'm writing a book based on our cancer journey and based on how to, you know, deal with the grief. And we'll share some of Scott's journal entries and stuff like that.
Oh, lovely. When do you have a expected date?
I don't yet.
On
it'll probably be out next year in 2027. And then this year I'm releasing a project of some of the songs that I've written. So I'm really excited about that go along with the journey.
Oh, yes. A new album, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you share a little more about that?
Well, I've written 10 songs for this new album, and they just kind of talk about all the things that we misunderstand. You know, we misunderstand, you know, there's a song on there about Jesus was a refugee. There's a song on there about how, you know, we need to, you know, look back at all those folks who paved the way for us and honor them, and, you know, not just think we're the ones that started it, you know, because there are a lot of folks. I love LGBTQ history, and there are a lot of those folks that paved the way for me.
And when is this new album coming?
It should be out at the end of August.
Oh, shortly.
Yes, shortly.
Great.
Yeah, super excited.
A title yet for it?
I think we're going to call it Maybe I Misunderstood.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, we'll have to. We'll definitely. I'd love to have you back when book hits.
Absolutely.
And get you to talk more about that and your journey with all that. And how do people find you? How do they, can you share the video you sent me? It's such a profound story.
Yeah. And so I am on Facebook and I'm on Instagram and I'm on all those sites. You can look up Justin Ryan. If you look up Southern Gospel Sissy on YouTube, it should pull up the channel. And I think this week we're at 162 episodes of that show. And then, other than that, you can go to look for music and stuff at our website at balmministries.net.
Balm, B-A-L-M.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. What else would you like to share with us today? We have about 7 minutes.
Well, I just want to share how glad I am and how honored that I am to have been able to have been here with you this morning and to share that, and hope that some of, you know, what I've said has been able to, you know, help somebody find some goodness, because at the end of the day, that's what we're all called to do.
Yeah. And I mean, life is short.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. None of us have that expiration date stamped on our bottoms for
yes.
anywhere. You know, we don't. And how do we make the best use of this one precious life?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we consider every day, every moment precious?
Well, I think for me, when Scott passed away, that was one of the things that I really started focusing on, is how short life is and how important it is to let the folks know that you're surrounded by how much they mean to you. You know, they say give them their flowers now, and that's what I kind of have been on a little whirlwind tour of lately, is letting folks know in my life, because you're right, life is too short.
It is. And Justin, so I think I can share this. You've moved here.
Yes,
locally.
I'm back in the Bradenton area.
Yay.
Yeah. So I'm back here, and it's been good, and I have a new partner, and that's been going well. And it's just, you know, it's like I've said, the goodness of God follows us throughout everything. And it may not work out the way we want it to, but that's when we have to look at the hidden things that we don't see.
Mm, beautiful. And if I can, we have an MCC church here
mm-hmm.
locally. You sing there on
yes.
occasion.
Church of the Trinity is my home church here in Sarasota. And there are a lot of MCC churches all over Florida. Actually, there's a great one in Venice. There's one in Tampa. There's one in St. Petersburg. They've got Florida covered.
I'm so happy to hear that. And what can I ask you, when you were coming out, you know, when you were a kid going through this and being different from the majority of those in your community,
mm-hmm.
the majority of those in your family, what kind of things were you going through? What did that feel like?
It felt like you felt like an outcast. You know, you feel like you don't belong, and you feel like the people who are supposed to be safe are not safe. And that's a scary feeling.
I can't imagine. I don't have any frame of reference for this.
But that's where, you know, we as LGBTQ people have our chosen family. And a lot of times our chosen family is we're a lot closer with them than we are with our real family. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just our God-given family.
Yeah. You know, I heard there's that movie. Oh, my goodness. I don't remember that. It's a year, like 1946.
Oh, yeah. Right. My friend, Kathy Baldock,
yeah.
who was in the video. Yes, they made that movie.
They made that movie, but it came here to Fogartyville for a viewing, and I, you know, I'm so glad I got to see it. But, yeah, she shares
yeah.
that, you know, I had my biological family, mm-hmm. and then I got my logical family.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love that phrasing. Mm-hmm. It just puts it into such a good perspective as well.
Absolutely. I would like, I don't know how much time we've got, but I would like to share with you all before we go today, I do have that recording of Scott singing Goodness of God, and I don't know when you want me to play it, but I thought it would just be good to go out with so that, you know, you remember, all of your listeners remember that, you know, even in those times of trouble, there's somebody there for you.
Yeah, in just a few minutes. Okay. Thank you. So let's talk the video that you sent me. Mm-hmm. Where can people say that? That was
so
just
if you look up Justin Ryan on YouTube or look up Southern Gospel Sissy, it pulls up the page and they're all on that page.
Yeah, and I think for anyone listening out there, if you'd like to kind of hear
all the stories,
a recap, it's a beautiful, heartfelt video. And I just was so touched listening to it, and I will review that multiple times, I'm sure, going forward. So before we play Scott's song, you know, his singing, I just want to thank you, Justin, for being here.
Oh, thank you
today.
For having me.
Again, Justin Ryan, I'm hoping that we can maybe get you into Fogartyville
to do a performance
for us. We'll connect you with Ariel. And for everyone tuning in, thank you so, so much. And please tune in next Tuesday with Julie and Jono on Our Changing Environment. And please take good care of yourselves. And then stay tuned next for Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! And Neil, can we play Scott's beautiful rendition, Justin, of The Goodness of God?
Sure. Go right ahead.
And all my life you have been faithful. And all my life you have been so, so good. With every breath that I am able, oh, I will sing the goodness of God.
I'm teared. Thank you.